Chapter 23, Dragon Time. Jinzan watched out the window as one of the reins of the great winged beasts, goblins called a Chaptark, was tied to one of the wrought iron fences in the flower garden of Lord Festrius Feldrake. Jinzan knew that it was a sign of poor leadership and an ill-controlled temper to kill messengers who bore unwelcome news. But he had been sorely tempted to incinerate the pompous sky rider who had delivered
Nihashtak's decree.
A 10-day? Really, dragon? You could not make any more haste than that? The delay seemed excessive to the impatient sorcerer, who saw no preparations to leave, but rather a settling in among the goblins of Githak's army. The citizens of Illard's Glen had fled in great haste as the goblin army overran the town. Many of the defenders had remained behind long enough that most of the refugees had been able to escape. Knights had stood their ground against impossible odds to buy the civilians extra moments to make it to the eastern and southern gates, where they might flee to Rainsdark and Corgan, respectively. Githak had ordered a token pursuit of the refugees, and his forces had engaged those who had gone along armed to protect the peasants, tradesmen, and others who were ill-equipped to defend themselves. The goblin general cared little for the fleeing cadrans, however, and quickly recalled his forces before they became too far separated from the main body of the army. The goblins had swept the city and rounded up all those humans who had remained. The able-bodied men were all killed as a precaution, with the exception of two knights that were taken alive with the hope of ransoming them later. The children and the infirm were taken hostage and reasonably well cared for. The goblins fed them and allowed them proper shelter. They did not mistreat or intentionally frighten them, and left them to be overseen by some of the older girl children. The women were pressed into service as attendants to the goblins, especially the officers. With the knowledge that the safety and well-being of their young ones were at stake, they were docile enough as household servants. Jinzan tried to remain detached from the goblins' treatment of their human prisoners. His own people had been conquered by these same cadrans ages ago, and it held a warped and distorted mirror before his face to see the way the goblins casually disposed of and used them. It would have felt more like a proper vengeance if Megrin's soldiers had been the ones to kill the human prisoners, rather than having them burned by the dozen by goblin fire hurlers. "More than a week I shall wait in this worthless cadran town. And for what? An escort from that great overgrown lizard?" Jinzan had been allowed to meet Nihashtak when he first proposed his plan. While the dragon goddess was certainly impressive in size and certainly seemed capable of inflicting great harm, he found her to be insufferably vain and naive. He had known beforehand that Nihashtak was looked down upon by the other goblin tribes as a fool, and his plan had relied on it. Convincing the dragon to send her armies to conquer a lair for her dullard offspring worked brilliantly for getting him into the upper minds of Rainsdark.
"Quit looking out the window and come play," a crackling voice called him from his musings.
Jinzan turned and saw three goblins seated around a small square table. Like many of the human furnishings in Lord Feldrake's manor home, the legs had been cut short by the goblins since they had moved in. What had once been likely a table where the lord and his guests might play at cards was now little more than a platform at shin height. A set of velvet upholstered chairs had likewise been shortened to goblin size and contained the personages of Kakart, Githak, and Naftak, who was the commander of the reinforcement divisions that had recently joined up with Githak's troops. "Do we not have more pressing tasks?" Jinzan asked. He knew the game well enough, but suspected strongly that the goblins would conspire against him. Jinzan looked down at the pile of square ivory tiles that were strewn face down on the table. Kakart mashed his hands in among them and mixed them vigorously, but with such a practiced hand that they did not flip over in the process.
"Sorcerer, you worry too much. We will have Nihashtak's blessing for the final battle. That is all we could wish for. Your toys are most effective and impressive, certainly, But with Nihashtag's aid, we cannot lose. Your plan will work now. Enjoy yourself, Githax said.
The general had been satisfied with the army's rapid conquest of Illard's Glen, but had been somewhat less optimistic about their assault on Rainsdark, which boasted much sterner defenses. News of their dragon goddess joining them, though, had erased all his doubts. While Jinzan agreed that the dragon's aid would certainly weigh heavily in their favor, one small detail in the message nagged at him.
And what of the demon Nihashtag mentioned? Jinzan asked, grateful that at least the dragon's name was pronounceable with Megrin sounds. The sorcerer pulled up a large silk pillow to the table and used it for a seat, folding his legs under him. The chairs were cut down so low that his knees would have been up by his chin had he tried to sit in one, and even if he had found one still left at human height, the table would have been too low to reach. The pillow was comfortable if somewhat undignified.
That is why she comes. Nihashtag will deal with the demon, if it is brave enough to show itself in battle despite her presence, Githax said.
The goblin general lazed in his chair and reached to select 5 of the tiles for himself. Kekart and Naftak did likewise, taking their starting allotment for the game. Jinzan still felt uneasy playing the game in the first place, but took his 5 tiles as well. It was a simple enough game on the surface. The tiles were blank on one side. On the other face, each edge of the square tiles had a symbol. On his turn, a player would play a tile and draw a tile from the middle to replace it. After the first tile was placed, any other tile placed had to lie adjacent to another with a matching symbol. Each player was attempting to make a ring of tiles that enclosed the largest area possible. Once one player completed a circuit, the round would end and bets would be paid out, using a complicated system that related to how large an area was fenced off in tiles, and certain modifiers for combinations of symbols facing inward. Players predominantly played on their own tiles, but were free to spend a turn adding tiles to their opponent's rings as well, to hinder them. If a player either had no eligible plays or simply wished to pass, he could drop a tile face up in the middle and select another as his turn. Those last 2 parts were what always concerned Jinzan about playing with the goblins. There were no rules preventing 2 or more of his opponents from ganging up on him to let one of the others win, and discarding tiles face up meant that cunning opponents could pass tiles to each other. Jinzan had learned a different variant of the game where the discarded tiles went face down, but Githax considered his way to be the proper way to play. The goblin's name for the game had no proper exact translation in Megrin, but Githax had explained that it came out to roughly swineherd making fences. Jinzan's people had learned the game ages ago from trade with the goblins and had named it Avarice. Many a game was lost when someone held out too long for a large payoff, and someone finished a smaller ring before their masterpiece was completed. Jinzan looked at his tiles. He was a rank novice at the game, in addition to his suspicion that the goblins would cheat him out of his money. He had already counted his coins as lost. The tiles he held were as good as any others. He had no grand plan for winning. He merely humored his goblin allies in playing and wanted to be in on their conversation, especially if he could steer it toward making useful plans rather than counting on their reptilian liege to take care of their affairs for them. Jinzan picked one of his tiles at random and plunked it down on the table as his first move. They had not yet decided the order of play, but Jinzan skipped over that formality and took the initiative. If this was to be a test of wits and wills, one likely stacked against him from the outset.
He would rather be bold.
The goblins exchanged glances, but none spoke against their human ally. Play proceeded as if nothing untoward had occurred. Jinzan began to wonder if anything had. These goblins had their own way of thinking of such things. Perhaps he had just stumbled into something they considered socially accepted, taking the lead in starting the game.
More likely, though, he had just marked himself as a troublemaker to be dealt with within the game.
You worry too much, sorcerer, Gathak said, placing a tile in front of him. I can tell you would rather we gather up all our troops and charge straight to the humans' minds. Rush in, blast with magic and your new weapons. Take what we want.
Gathak picked up a tile, and Play proceeded past him as he talked.
Surely I would much enjoy finishing our campaign with a great and crushing success. Sometimes prudent weighs more, though. You think I take the warning of a demon lightly? I do not. I take the assurance of Nehashtag's protection very seriously, though. To rush in now and perhaps face a demon, maybe we lose half our forces. Demons can be all manner of shapes and sizes. And we know almost nothing of this one. With Nehashtag leading us, no demon will stand against us. So I say we are in no hurry. My kind have a fable we tell of a fox and a monkey who both wish to get to an island in the center of a deep pond. They have heard that there is a great treasure there, and are each eager to claim it. The monkey.
Yes, my people have that story as well, or a version of it. The monkey is impatient and gets eaten by monsters that live in the pond when he tries to swim it. The fox waits until winter and walks across once the water freezes, Jinzan said. He absently played a tile and drew another from the center.
Spoken just like a monkey, too,
Kickhart said, laughing at Jinzan's expense.
I may hate the cold, but I would like to walk under frozen water rather than swim with the lake monsters. You would think that humans live so long that they would show more patience. I would wager you are 10 summers older than I am.
But you still sit as still as a child.
I do not care for your tone, Tinker, Jinzan warned. He realized that his temper was growing short. The room had begun to feel uncomfortably warm, and he suspected that it was not the room that was growing heated. He had decided going into the game that Gathak and Kikart were too valuable as allies, but should the lesser-ranked Naftak cross him, he was prepared to slay the goblin right at the gaming table. With the performance of the cannons during the brief assault on the defenses of Illard's Glen, he felt he had reaffirmed his value and was prepared to trade some of the leeway that accompanied that for a bit more respect and fear.
Have ease, sorcerer, Gathak said. We are having a game tonight. Perhaps Kekart has too much of the human lord's wine and has freed his tongue, but perhaps you have drunk too little. Your brain is tied in knots with worry. Wash them loose with wine. I know you tell me the Kedron wine is like urine, but it comes from the stores of your enemy. Drink it, and think it is their tears and blood.
I am not certain tears or blood would taste any better, Jinzan said dryly, drawing chuckles from his opponents. But if I am to lose all my coin tonight, I may as well enjoy it. Switching over to the Kedron tongue, he called out, Girl, bring me some wine. The best Lord Feldrake had kept in his cellar. Jinzan spoke fluent Kedron, with a smooth Megrin accent unmistakable atop it. The sorcerer let out a long sigh and ran his fingers through his hair. Speaking Kedron for the first time in years, surrounded by people who viewed him as a curiosity and who likely spoke daggers of him behind his back, it brought back old times for Jinzan. Today we continue the lesson on the expansionist wars of Warlock Rashan. As we covered yesterday, the Empire was not always so large as it is today, and we have Warlock Rashan to thank for many of the varied peoples who now pay fealty to Emperor Darus. Their teacher had droned on in that uniquely didactic tone that seemed to develop in all classroom instructors if you stood them before students for enough summers. While these territories have now been assimilated into the Empire proper, Warlock Rashan made many enemies in the process. Who can tell me one of the many epithets his enemies used to describe him? Rashan the Bloodthirsty, volunteered one student, a fresh-faced lad named Crow, who was always eager to get himself noticed. Good try, but that was how he came to be known here in Kadrin, by those who grew weary of his constant warring, said the instructor, Dolvain Lurian. Dolvain Lurian was a respected member of the faculty at the Imperial Academy, a third circle sorcerer who was marked for high places, despite his low birth. Jinzan liked him better than the pompous sorcerers from the well-heeled bloodlines. Jinzan had always thought the Imperial Circle's control of the breeding of major sorceress bloodlines of Kadrin made them like warhorses or dogs, creatures bred for servitude and only allowed to rut when and where their masters wished. Dolvain treated the lowborn and non-Kadrin students in his class equally, and Jinzan vowed he would not forget that fact.
Rashan the Merciless, offered another student, Chessa Destrier.
She was fair and gray-eyed and had taken the lead among her peers on the path to womanhood. With curves where the other girls were only beginning to hint at them, she drew the attention of all the boys in the class. Jinzan was no exception, but he realized that she was out of his reach. As the pride of the Destrier family and the granddaughter of Inner Circle member Fenris Destrier, Jinzan would be lucky to escape with his life if he were ever to bed her, and would be lucky to escape with a shred of his dignity if he even hinted to her of the possibility. She was all smiles and curtsies when the teachers were around, but was a young tyrant among the students when they were left unsupervised. 15 summers of being told she was better than her peers had sunk in well.
That one hits the mark. Very good. Who else?
Rashan the Murderer.
That was what Lorimar called him in the formal declaration of the First Necromancer War, said Jural. The most bookish of the students in Jinzan's class, Jural was a very serious young lad. His ancestry was unknown, or at least partly. He had been born to a whore in Delanter, and there was plenty of speculation of his father likely being a member of the Imperial Circle. He had always studied hard and was once the top student in the class, but that ended once they were old enough for the ranking. Jinzan was the top-ranked student now. They had teased him for winters for his darker skin, though their own grew nearly as dark in the summer months. For his accent, for the fact that he was from a lesser bloodline. The latter bothered him the most, since among the Magrin, he would have been considered exceptionally well-bred. His parents were both sorcerers, though secretly, as it was only recently that Kadrin had granted Magrin citizens the privilege of taking sorceress training.
Jinzan had taken ranking day as a small sampling of the vendetta he was harboring.
He had thrashed his classmates and easily claimed the top ranking, not even bothering to toy with them. He had even beaten the top student of the class ahead of him, before finally succumbing to one of the older and more polished duelists in the academy. Rashan the Deceiver, Jinzan added, unable to keep the contempt from his voice. His accent had been a bit stronger in those days, and he heard a few snickers at the slightly misspoken word.
True enough, there is no need for bitterness, though. Magrin is part of the Empire now, and those old grudges have been set aside. Your being here is proof enough of that, Dolvain said. But that leads to an interesting topic. Does anyone, besides Jinzan, know how he got that name?
Was that when Warlock Rashan negotiated a peace deal and used the signing of the treaty as a cover for a surprise attack? Jural said.
That was Rashan's bargain, right? He offered them a good deal just to get them to agree to the terms, and at the signing ceremony he killed all their top generals and their king, not to mention a dozen sorcerers.
I see someone has been reading The Diplomacy of Fire and Steel.
All the knights read it as a matter of course, but I highly recommend it to anyone who wishes a deeper understanding of Warlock Rashan, or even just warfare in general. Does anyone else have any other names he was known by? Dolvain asked, pausing to give the students an opportunity to respond, but hearing nothing.
Jinzan could have gone on at some length of all the things he had heard Rishan called. His people were quite creative when it came to the subject, having been made a laughingstock by the long-dead tyrant. The warlock was 80 winters dead, and still the Megren were known for being naive and trusting, all from that one incident. It had destroyed their identity as a free-thinking land of philosophers and warrior poets in the minds of the world, and replaced it with the image of a farmer who invited a wolf to make peace with his chickens. Very well, then we move on to the war with Megren itself. At the time, Megren was believed to have been strong enough to withstand an extensive campaign. With allies from across the sea and with the goblins to the west and southwest, as well as favorable relations with the ogre tribes. As we now know, much of Megren's strength was exaggerated, both by bards' tales and careful use of spies to spread false rumors of treaties. Jinzan could feel the eyes of his classmates drifting to him as the talk centered around his homeland, its deficiencies and their weaknesses as a people. Jinzan knew that Dolvain was oblivious to the embarrassment he was causing, but the young sorcerer just hoped his skin, for the half-shade darker it was than his pure-blooded Kadrin classmates, was dark enough to hide his blush. The serving girl who brought the wine was not one of the Lord's household staff. Those had likely managed to flee with the rest of the Lord's household. She struggled with the wine cork, seemingly never having used a corkscrew before. The goblins had rather haphazardly organized their captives, according to what they felt needed to be done, with no real attempt to find out who was qualified to what tasks. Presumably, Jinzan thought, they figured that the mundane tasks that would be required of them could be done by anyone. The three goblins at the table with him shared a laugh at the girl's ineptitude. Jinzan was tempted to just use a little magic to pull the cork out and be done with it, but he found himself distracted by the girl herself. She had jaw-length dark hair and blue eyes, rimmed red from crying. She looked haggard, understandable given that her town had just been sacked by the very people she was trying to serve wine, but not very old. Jinzan suspected that she probably had a very young child somewhere nearby, being watched over by goblin guards and some barely pubescent girl. Despite not looking her best, she was comely enough, and Jinzan had not been among other humans for many long weeks.
"Your turn, sorcerer. Make a play," said Naftak, seated to Jinzan's right. "Have this serving girl later."
The goblins laughed at the comment. Despite not understanding a word of goblin speech, the girl was savvy enough to get the gist of the comment, and she blushed as she continued to stab at the top of the wine bottle with the corkscrew. Jinzan turned and looked sidelong down at his tiles, absently playing one. He had given up on trying to win and was just playing for the sake of playing now. His gaze fell on the lesser-ranked General Naftak, and his eyes narrowed. The goblin's laughter petered out awkwardly under Jinzan's glare. He turned his attention back to the serving girl, looking her in the eye as he took the bottle and corkscrew from her hand. "Here, allow me," he told her in Kadrin. With a few expert twists, he had the corkscrew in and easily pulled the cork out without needing any magic. She set out four goblets and took the bottle back from Jinzan to begin to pour their drinks. After she had poured the first two, he held out a hand for her to stop. "Just a moment," he told her, still using her own language. "Aru, Bidesi, Lioki, Quatuan, Gelora." And Naftak rose suddenly from his chair. The ceilings of Lord Feldrake's manor home were thrice the height of a man, nearly six times the height of a goblin. Jinzan left the unfortunate goblin pinned heavily to the ceiling, as if leaving a sack of grain atop him. He then took up the two empty goblets and stood. "I believe I will take my leave of you gentlemen for tonight. Please thank General Naftak for his suggestion when he returns." Jinzan reverted to Megren, which he assumed the serving girl did not understand, but he knew that Githak did not speak Kadrin. He cared not a whit for whether the tinker could, but he would not have put it past the wily old goblin. As the sorcerer stalked off toward the room he had borrowed in Feldrake Manor, he gestured imperiously behind him. "Come along," he ordered in Kadrin. A swish of skirts and the scuffling of soft shoes on the lord's rug told him that he had been heeded. Jin-Zan let out a long sigh. He felt more relaxed than he had in a long time. He had been so caught up in his plans for the assault on Rainsdark that he had not taken the time to properly celebrate Denric's return to the seas. Certainly, though, the wine and the exertions of the unclad serving girl curled asleep on his chest had helped some as well. He did not feel that he had mistreated the girl. He had offered her no violence, and she had not protested, which for Jinzan's conscience was enough, given the circumstances. He could not entirely fool himself into thinking she had gone to his bed willingly, since the implied threat of violence was present, whether he would have carried through with it or not. He told himself that he was better than the Kadrins who had sacked Magrin in his grandfather's time. The girl, whose name he had not even asked, had been frightened and trembling when he took her away from the goblins. Now she lay sleeping peacefully. He had come near to killing Naftak just a short while ago. It might have been the final hole that would sink his ship, had he gone through with it. Githak was growing weary of him. He could tell. Perhaps it would be best to keep out of the way of the goblin general for a few days. He had to keep in mind that without the goblins, he lacked the means to take Rainsdark and get into the mines. The staff of Galen would give him the power to make the Kadrins truly pay. The ether void around its tomb had been impenetrable for thousands of summers. The draw against all ether within a few paces of it was ferocious. The wards that protected it rebuilt themselves and repaired chips that were knocked loose from spears, slingstones, and arrows. Even catapults seemed unable to harm it enough to break through before it undid the damage the siege engine could inflict. Cannons would be different. He just needed patience. He wrapped an arm around the sleeping serving girl, who stirred slightly at his touch. He felt the warmth and smoothness of her skin. He had not been with a woman in far too long. Jin-Zan laid his head back and closed his eyes, snuffing out the magical light that had kept away the darkness as midnight approached. It was time to see what Captain Zane was up to.